Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I've invited author James Earl McCracken to the program. James was born in 1960 in Tacoma Park, Maryland, and received a BA in English from the University of Pennsylvania in 1982. After a brief stint as a technical writer, McCracken moved to London in 1984 with the intention of becoming a writer of short stories and novels. Well, unfortunately, things didn't work out as planned, and James returned to the U.S. in 1986. 22 years later, he has now published his first novel, Rue de la Pompe, a satiric urban fantasy. He is married to a prominent attorney and human rights activist from Beirut, Lebanon, and has a daughter who is now a junior in Middleburg, Virginia. And I'm actually talking to James today right from Paris. So I just want to welcome you to the program and thank you for taking some time out for us today, James.
Oh, thank you, Juanita. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, so it must feel fantastic to finally, after so many years, get your first novel out.
Yes, yeah. It sounds quite as bad as it sounds. I didn't take 22 years to write it.
No.
Actually, it only took about 2 years, but no, it did. It was a dream deferred, but completed nonetheless.
Yeah, so it must mean even more, you know, with such a rough start in early days. And I think a lot of writers start out that way, you know, with a very romantic idea of an early start in writing. And typically it doesn't happen till, you know, maybe later in life.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. If I had kind of stumbled onto success when I first tried in my early 20s, frankly, I don't know how well I would have handled or been able to even duplicate it with a second effort. So, you know, things take time and they happen for a reason.
Yes, absolutely. So as I said, we're talking to you from Paris today and we're getting a good connection, so I'm just thrilled with that. So
Me too.
Yeah, and this is really the setting of Rue de la Pompe. So tell us about your relationship with this city.
Sure. Well, I moved here in September 2005, and I've lived a good bit overseas in my adult life, about half of the time since I was about 24 years old. I've been outside of the United States, and I've been to some fairly out of the way places like Mongolia and Iraq and Lebanon.
Mm.
And so, you know, you get to the point where you think you've seen it all and you're a little bit jaded. And so I came to Paris, and I thought, well, this is going to be familiar, you know, between the Starbucks and the McDonald's and everything else. And I was kind of taken for surprise that it still remains fairly unique and true to itself, unlike a lot of other cities that have started to look the same the world over. And it just from that kind of initial culture shock, some of the ideas for the book started.
Mm. So it was actually Paris that sort of inspired this. It wasn't that you were sitting down or really kind of mining your experience for what you were going to write a novel about. It was this city that opened up for you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I thought for years and years, since I kind of put the writing aside, that I would return to it one day. And so it was a great procrastination, knowing that, oh, okay, yeah, maybe, you know, next month, next year, et cetera, or when I retire, whatever it was, that I would come to it. And it was the feelings the city evoked were so strong that the story started to kind of write itself in my mind as I ventured out more and more into Paris. And I thought, you know, look, I got to start writing this down. And if I can't make something out of this, I really have to put aside the notion that I'll ever be a writer.
Oh.
So I put a little pressure on myself.
Yeah, you did. So, okay, tell us exactly, your subtitle is A Satiric Urban Fantasy. What exactly does that mean?
You know, this is the one question that always kind of comes up.
So, of course.
My decision to go with this subtitle, really, you know, there's a lot of fiction out there, American fiction, that's set in Paris. So, one, I kind of wanted to separate it out and give the writer a clue that this was not kind of sloppy, sentimental ode to the city, and that it was came at it from a very different angle, a humorous angle with some elements of fantasy in it.
Mm-hmm.
So that. Yeah, I sense a skepticism in your voice. It was shared by many of the other people who read it early on. In one interview, somebody asked me about it. I said, you know, this would have been a controversial choice, except there was no controversy because everyone hated it.
Oh, no.
But I decided to stick with it anyway.
Stick with it anyway. No, I was trying to wrap my head around the whole idea of urban and Paris because I don't equate those two words together. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's just, it's confounding, and I don't know. I think it's great. So, okay, tell us about then this story. What happens in this story and this lead character of yours, Michael White, very intriguing. So tell us a little bit.
It starts out rather simply and actually stays rather simple because I'm simple-minded, but Michael White is an American living in Paris. I mean, because you could generously call him a businessman. He's more kind of like a bureaucrat in the private sector, and his job involves a certain amount of just attending meetings and shuffling papers. I guess he's when the novel opens, he's a little bit disillusioned. He's just turned 30 and, in a sense, waiting for real life to begin. And he, through a set of circumstances that aren't immediately explained, on the night of his 30th birthday, he ends up with a tuxedo that's been given to him and an invitation to a party from neighbors that he has not yet met before. And this starts a series of events that sends Michael through the city looking for the first French franc.
Hmm. Interesting. Is there some historical significance to that? Like, where did you get the idea of the French franc?
Well, part of it, I was just looking for a MacGuffin, a device to drive the plot that not necessarily is of a greater significance itself than the characters. And I really liked, when I found out about the history of the franc, I really liked it because the origin was not to be used as part of the internal monetary system as we're used to with coins that are minted, but it was actually minted by the French during the Hundred Years' War to pay ransom. And it was to pay ransom to the English because their king had been kidnapped during the war. So, and that is how the first franc came about. So I like that idea because I also liked it because then this French-British rivalry starts to play into it as well as Michael is along this search. He's kind of prodded and poked by both French and British parties that are interested in the coin as well.
Okay, so and this brings in to the whole story a whole slew of other characters that you have.
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about the other characters. Some of the, I mean, we got some very eccentric people in and out of this book.
There are a few. There's his workmates who we have Groot, who's from the Netherlands and has a interesting way of expressing himself. A little difficulty with English, and then Groot's girlfriend Leah, who's Italian, and then there is a very interesting character who's the executive assistant of the office named Fiona, and Michael's nemesis at work. Now, balancing that in terms of the search for the coin, you have his upstairs neighbors, Yvonne and Danielle, and then on the other side you have the British gentleman who's interested, whose name is Alistair Woods.
Okay.
And then you have a whole bunch of people who just kind of pop up
mm-hmm.
who are a little bit odd, the Zen Buddhist Swiss jeweler, the Castilian hitman.
You forget all your characters.
Yeah, the bar-owning philosopher, et cetera. So a little bit of something for everyone.
It sounds to me like you were really going for more entertainment than you were, like, having some deep, you know, life-changing message underneath this story.
That's true. I mean, if this changes your life, I don't want to know what condition your life was in before you read the book. I mean, it's really just designed to entertain. I think, you know, we were talking about when I was writing before and then the gap of time and now, and I think part of the problem was, you know, I didn't even know what I should be what I should have been writing when I was working on stuff in the early 20s. I was trying to pretend to be something I wasn't, or try to write material that was just, you know, I didn't have the experience or the voice for. This time around, I just decided, hey, I'm going to write a book that I'd want to read.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's going to be fun, it's going to be interesting, it's going to be entertaining. And so that's what I sought out to do.
And I think that you're really achieving that. I mean, early reviews, you've just put this book out, early reviews are very positive. And from what I've read, I mean, I'm hearing words like different, unpredictable, witty. There was even one reviewer that had said something about it was like reading your book was like spending a day at the amusement park or something like that. I mean, it really is unique, and I was wondering if you were going for that right from the start.
Yes and no. Interestingly enough, I was very concerned with pace from the start of it, and really even tried to make it as frenetic as possible at parts after I finished the first draft, and it's very conscious of any point of where it might kind of slow too much. So it was very gratifying to read the reviewer's comments in that case.
Yeah.
I guess the big difference between what I originally thought and the way the book turned out is I did not think that kind of the humor would take it over as much as it did. But that's kind of how it opened up for me when I started writing it. And that's how I think the main character and what was bouncing off of him, it developed that way to treat things, you know, in a satirical manner, a little bit lightly. Pretty much makes fun of everybody, but not in too harsh a way.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to overtly offend anybody here. So let's talk a little bit about Michael's personality, because you offer five different aspects of who he is. So tell us about these different personalities.
Right. This is now in the original draft, I only had the five sub personalities in one scene, and I liked how it worked, and I wasn't really happy with how I was expressing his thoughts throughout the book. So in the redraft, I just switched to the five personalities whenever Michael is, in a sense, thinking or talking to himself. And the five sub-personalities are Mikey, which is his inner child, Mr. White, which is kind of the voice of the parent that we all carry in us, Smartass, which is somewhat like the voyeur of his personality, Jackass, kind of the agent provocateur, and Dumbass, the fool. So just to show what's going on in his mind, and to do it in a playful, dialogue-driven way is why I chose to do that.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience, as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books, as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their books to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is a priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with James Earl McCracken, author of Rue de la Pompe, a satiric urban fantasy. You can find out more about James through his website, www.jameseearlmccracken.com. And so is it through these different personalities then that a lot of the satire comes through in this story?
I think part of it is that, and part of it is that you see where Mike will get into an unusual encounter, and as we all do, particularly if we're in a foreign country where we are polite and we may not say what we're thinking, but at this rate you get to realize exactly what it is that he is thinking, and yes, some of the satire does emerge from that.
Mm-hmm. So for you as an American, and you've spent some time in Paris, obviously walking the streets like your main character does, so how mm-hmm. would you describe Paris, and how did your own opinions or observations on the whole cultural difference influence this story?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, first of all, it's impossible for me to be objective about the city at this point. I mean, I can't even say it's my favorite city or where it ranks on it. It's just in a separate category. And I mean, certainly it's because the book is set here. And what I tried to do while I was writing it is as much as I could to kind of keep my emotional feelings about the city at an arm's length so that I could always try to identify with Michael just discovering the city. And it was a little difficult to do after living here in time. You get used to things and something like that. But I tried to keep it as fresh as I could so that I would be surprised when I went out. Or, you know, and sometimes it worked. Sometimes I'd be walking the streets and it would dawn on me all over again, hey, you're in Paris, that realization. And I think it's always kind of, it's not unique to me, to a lot of Americans. The cities that you think are going to be the most familiar, perhaps that you've seen the most or heard the most about, sometimes the differences really leap up. And although many of the stereotypes about the French are really overstated or not true, what I will say is it's a very different set of behavioral expectations in your social interactions or your business interactions with people. And the language barrier is still there, even though there's most of the French people, Parisians are, speak English and are very happy, contrary to what you often hear in the U.S., happy to try to speak English with you. But those things they still come up.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure they do. So what are some of the behavioral differences? That's interesting.
Well, for example, if you go into a store here, any kind of store, they'll greet you with bonjour.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't say it in return, it's really very rude.
Oh.
If you just kind of smile or you're insecure because you don't really speak French or something like that, it's a little abrupt to a French person.
Mm-hmm.
And so as much as, you know, we have our own salutations and farewells, they do too. They're probably a little bit more fixed about what you should say when and in terms of politeness. So you would never come right in and to a business and ask your question. You would always have to greet the person.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
So that's just one example.
Yeah.
Hopefully little other things like that.
Oh, that's so interesting. So do you think then it's necessary for the reader of your book to actually have been in Paris to fully understand the story and all of those kinds of those ins and outs of actually being there?
I sure hope not. I don't think so. I at the same time, I didn't want to go overboard and try to explain what everything was and what the significance of a certain museum or the history of the Eiffel Tower was or anything like that to put people off. But I think really that if you have been to Paris and spent some time here, you may feel like you're getting an inside joke that a reader who hadn't been here before, but hopefully the reader who had not been, you know, to Paris before, but would have no difficulty following the story and would be intrigued enough to want to come here even more.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting how international travel like that and experiencing different cultures can really make you look at your own culture and where you came from in a little different light. Have you noticed any major observations like that about being an American or, you know, living in the United States from all of your travels? I mean, you've been to Mongolia. I've never met anyone that's been to Mongolia.
It's a great place if you ever get a chance to go.
I bet.
If you like the outdoors, if you like camping, nature.
Yeah.
A magnificent place. Mm. Great people, too. Mm. But, you know, Juanita, it it really strikes me when I'm abroad, more often there's that adjustment when I go back to the States. Now, I've been here for 3 years. I've only made one trip back. That was 2 years ago. I'm getting ready to leave Paris at the end of next week and move back to the Washington, D.C. area.
Oh.
So I'm already kind of readying myself for the shock when I get back there. Generally, it's very positive when you initially get back. I mean, I find the United States the easiest place in the world to live,
mm.
in the sense of the services and, of course, my own familiarity with it. But even so, I mean, my wife is foreign. She was born and raised in Lebanon, and she feels the same way. She's traveled a great bit, and she feels the same way about the U.S. It's a very comfortable and easy society.
Mm.
And then you start to notice the little things after you're back for a while.
Mm.
But if anything, I mean, all the travel I've done has made me appreciate our country more and the things we have. I mean, I'm no less critical in some ways about it because,
sure.
you know, sometimes my expectations are a little tougher about, hey, you know, things don't have to be this way.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, it's I'm glad it's home.
So you're going to be happy to be back?
I will.
Good, good, good. Now, for this first book of yours, you actually decided to self-publish. And from what I understand, that was the decision that you made before even sending any manuscripts to agents or publishers. I mean, you wanted to self-publish. Why is that?
Well, it's kind of odd. You're right. I mean, that's true. But even back up a little bit, I didn't really think, when I sat down to write the book,
mm-hmm.
I didn't think of self-publishing. I mean, I kind of,
oh.
and I think it's good. I kind of used for myself the same discipline as if it were going to go to a publishing house or if it were going to go to an agent first. And knowing that I couldn't be lazy or sloppy or anything else, because then it wouldn't even be considered. So I went at it the whole time when I was drafting it, but when I came to the conclusion of the drafting stage, and it was time to go into, you know, sending it out, I started to read into how you go about doing it and about the agent, and, you know, going through an agent versus going directly to the publishers and sending off the query letters and waiting, and I thought, you know, I really don't want to do this. I don't want to just stop for 6 months or a year or longer than that and just pursue this, that, you know, sure, I'd love to get the big book contract, you know, bestseller, film rights and all, but that wasn't the point. The point was just to get a published novel,
mm-hmm.
to get it in my hands, to get in the hands of other people. And I figured, you know, hey, let's look into self-publishing. I did. The more I looked into it, the more I liked it. And it took... I think the whole process from when I submitted the manuscript, the initial manuscript, to the book being on Amazon for sale was about 5 months.
Mm.
About 5 months. And so it's great. I know some other people, even after they self-publish, they feel a little bad about it. I think, you know, probably the stigma of paying to get published, it's only second to paying for sex in our society in some ways. But, you know,
I
have no such moral qualms.
You didn't mind.
I'm very happy with it.
Yeah, okay. I meant
the self-publishing, of course.
Yeah, right.
It's
great that you did decide to do that. You know, with so many books coming out now, it can be really discouraging for authors to be sending, you know, manuscript after and query letter after query letter to agents and publishers, and then, you know, get denied in the long run and having all of that time, and, you know, it can be really disappointing. So I think it's fantastic that you just went ahead and self-published and now it's out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just didn't want to give myself an excuse to quit. I knew I could, you know.
Yeah.
Do this, oh, well, nobody wants it. Feel sorry for myself. It goes back into the drawer, and then, you know, what, I wait another 22 years? I don't think so.
No. And you actually, you don't have time to waste because you are on book two.
I'm old,
already.
Yeah.
No. You are writing a sequel.
Right, yeah,
yeah.
Well, that's the plan.
Yeah.
It's been intended as a multi-book series, and...
Mm-hmm.
There are a few things not wrapped up at the end of the first novel, and so we'd have to, you know, get to work on the second one.
Was that the idea from the beginning, James, that you wanted to do a bit of a series out of this story?
pretty early on, because, you know, when I thought of the original story and then I thought of the ending, I thought, well, you know, ending it that way, it seemed a little trite to kind of wrap everything up at once. And as I worked on it, there was just more and more material became available to me, and I think at one point, and I was kind of caught on this by some of my readers early on, that I was probably holding back too much, you know, for the next book and not explaining enough in this book. So I kind of went the other way, still held something back. But, yeah, very early on in the process, it went from one book to multi-book.
Multi-book. So will Michael be staying in Paris in book two?
Yeah, it's intended to be a four-book series showing a one-year cycle.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So this takes place, you know, approximately January to March.
Fun. Well, you must just be having a blast getting that going now.
It's been great. It's a fun story to write.
Yeah,
really
absolutely.
Is.
Well, let's mention your website. It's jameseearlmccracken.com.
Well, it would be if I ever got it up and running. It was up for a little while, and then it kind of took it down to work on it, and then my internet service went out in my apartment. So, you know, but it'll get back up on it.
Okay, good. Well, we'll keep an eye out for it, but I know that your book is available through Amazon and probably, I'm sure, can be ordered through local booksellers, so people can get a hold of it for sure. And keep checking for your website. Well, thank you so much for coming on the program today, James. This has been wonderful. Are you doing any kind of promotions while you're still there in Paris for your book?
No, I really haven't had the opportunity to do too much here with wrapping up work, but I'll have a little time off when I get back to the States and try to get a little bit more active.
Yeah, we'll have to see about book signings, please. Keep in touch if you have any book signings. Yeah, it would be interesting to see your book on shelves in Paris. Are you leaving any back there?
Well, no, it hasn't happened, but interestingly enough, you can get it on the Amazon French website.
Oh, okay.
And
good.
So that's the next best thing.
Yes. Well, wonderful. Well, did you have any final thoughts that you wanted to share with listeners today before we let you go?
Well, no, just to thank you, Juanita. It's been very enjoyable, and I appreciate your time.
Well, great, and we appreciate you coming on live all the way from Paris today, and good luck wrapping up your business, and welcome back home when you get here, and much success to you with your new book.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, you take care.
You too.
All right, listeners, that's been James Earl McCracken. His new book, Rue de la Pompe, a satiric urban fantasy, is out now. It's a fantastic read, very entertaining. So if that's what you are in the mood for, I really, really suggest you looking for this book. And you know, this is a summer. This would be a great beach read. So do pick it up. It is wonderful. So thank you so much for listening to Inside Scoop Live once again. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.